what we're remediating is essentially a crude extract. We don't remediate the plant specifically. So what's unfortunate is I've seen cases where the crop is hot, and because of the hot crop, they're forced to destroy the crop, and it never, so the crop just never sees the light of day. It never becomes a product because the crop's destroyed in the field because it's over these limits. With moves to, you know, like the 1% rule, and some of these other things that are allowing a little.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hello, hello, and we're live. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining, and thanks, Justin, for joining. I'm really excited about this conversation. There are a couple people that have already chimed in. Kevin and Justin, thank you so much for saying hello. I'd love to learn more about this, Craft Hemp Farms. Please, let's connect. But I want to give a real quick shout out and thank you to all of our members and all of our sponsors today. Of course, I've got to pull them up, but South Bend Industrial Hemp has done an incredible job with our fiber variety trials. And so I want to give a shout out to her and all of our partners, our research partners who have been involved at building that and who are currently working on our trials across the U.S. And so it's really exciting. Also, a huge shout out to Formation Ag, great sponsor. Also, Westtown Bank, another great sponsor, and Let's Talk Hemp. I'd love to connect with any of you that are going to be attending at the SHE in Tennessee. So please let's wrap this up, or let's get something on the schedule. So anyways, Justin, I want to pass this over before I ramble on, because I can go on and on about all the things GHA is doing. But really, I want to highlight what you guys are doing in this space. If you wouldn't real quick give a quick intro about who you are, where you came from, what your background is before you got into hemp and cannabis.
Sure. So thanks for having me today. My name is Justin Cilio, and I'm with Entex Corporation, and we do extraction, sort of large scale automated industrial extraction equipment. Personally, I'm, you know, a 20-year engineer through various industries of starting in aerospace and then into automation and some robotics. And I really teamed up with my partners here in the hemp space to bring kind of sound science and engineering into what was really a pretty chaotic space, especially when we started. So really, we've come together, you know, as a group of, you know, different professional engineers, some scientists and whatnot, to really apply good operational practice and just kind of good means to try to take a lot of the, the variables out of the process and just apply a lot of those things that we've learned over the years. And that's really what Entex was built on, is now to create that automation. And, we've got our systems are really targeted at being end to end, right? So the process goes, the material goes in the front end and it comes out the back end with kind of little involvement from the operators.
Yeah. Okay. So you said a couple of things about your process and about your background is automated industrial. Talk to me about what that means for extraction. Let's just dive in.
Sure. Yeah. So, first industrial. So we serve systems from, you know, a few hundred pounds a day up to many thousands of pounds a day. And really trying to find those, you know, from a lot of the earlier stuff was kind of bench scale based. There may have been a couple of, you know, 100-pound systems. But as things got into, you know, thousands of pounds a day of processing capacity, they got very labor intensive, really hard, just a lot of work, a lot of touch time, a lot of waste, even a lot of work to piece a system together that was capable of doing that if you could find the pieces. So then the automation comes in, and what we've really done is started with a really holistic system engineering perspective and kind of stepped back and looked at that processing capacity and all of the pieces that go together. And so then we balanced our systems kind of from end to end and applied the automation, which is where we connected all the pieces so that the product really does flow through. So the automation includes, you know, our own in-house developed software, which manages that process and kind of moves it along from each of the different steps of the extraction process. So it's kind of push button. And a lot of the things, you know, the downstream processes are dependent on the upstream inputs. And so our automation is able to take advantage of that. And because it's all together, you don't have to, you know, the operator doesn't have to think about what did I do 3 steps ago in order to prepare for this step that I'm about to take on right now.
Right. So it's just put in, and then on the end, are you getting a crude product?
So that's the first output option.
Right.
But the system, our basic system goes all the way through to distillate.
Okay.
And so that is completely closed loop all the way to a distillate offtake. There's a crude offtake available if you want it. So in the process, you can take it out at that point. We do still, you know, pass through a crude state on our way to distillate. But so that's the, you know, really the process goes all the way from biomass in one end to distillate out the other.
And talk to me about processing capacity. And then I kind of want to get into like how things have shifted, right? When we talk about what did come on the market, and then as we started to scale, I'm kind of curious from you, yeah, how you guys have accommodated that scale.
Yeah, so a lot of the scale has been, you know, the front end, obviously the pounds you're putting in, is those pounds have to be handled. And so for our, you know, many hundreds of pounds, so, you know, up to 1,000 pounds a day kind of processing, we still use the centrifuge based system. And so you can load them by bags, which is fairly traditional. On our larger scale systems, you know, like our 5,000 pounds a day and up, we actually have a patent pending large scale, like batch carousel. And so it's all conveyor fed. So this is from a large, you know, many 1,000 pound hopper. The material is actually conveyed in, loaded into that hopper to really take out all of the, or reduce the amount of labor in the biomass prep on the front end that goes into the centrifuge based systems. So that's been one of the big, you know, kind of evolutions is because we still have to get, no matter what system you're using, you still got to get the biomass in. And so managing that biomass in and out is where we spend, you know, definitely there's a good amount of thought that goes into the front end of the process because that's, you know, it's just a touch point that has to happen. We've also put a ton of time into what happens after that. And so for us, you know, it's one of the very few anyway, truly closed loop systems. So once the biomass does go in and the extraction occurs, you know, and we are an ethanol based system, I should point that out too. So, you know, we use an ethanol extraction, but once it's washed the ethanol, you don't touch it again until you're taking your distillate off the other end of the system. So it's pumped all the way through, you know, it's chilled, it's heated, it's everything is managed along the way. So in order to support that scale, you know, we didn't want to have a lot of off-taking and manual transferring and, you know, having to do, you know, rotovaps and bake ovens, a lot of these things that became, have been really burdensome for a lot of the industry to get a high quality product. So, again, it goes all the way in. We have an excellent, you know, desolventizing process so we can achieve complete residual solvent removal all in process without having to have any offtake or any other sort of off-stream processing, manual processing.
So did you say what your processing capacity is for your equipment?
Yeah, so our processing goes up to, we have a 5,000 pound a day system and we have another one that goes up to 10,000 pounds, which is essentially, you know, it's basically double the what we call the MIDI. So our MIDI system is a 5,000 pound per day processing capacity. And then we have the, you know, the smaller end of our line. We have a 900 and an 1800 pound a day. So those are really intended to serve these different scales of farmers or processors. But we've really seen a lot of the growers, you know, that, you know, 1800 pound a day, is actually a pretty sweet spot for a lot of these processors as well.
That was going to be my next question, is what is that sweet spot, or what are you seeing as a trend in the industry for size of capacity or capacity that's needed?
We're seeing a lot of people want to go bigger, you know, and so the 1800 pounds seems really relevant today. I've got a lot of people that's the reality is that they're in, and for the near term horizon, based on the acreage they're growing, that the 1800 pound a day system is a really useful, really useful size. The 5000 pound a day system, kind of the next step up. Certainly we have a good number of folks that are very interested in that capacity, and they're looking towards the future of building, a processing facility and having the throughput to support that. And then we've got, a smaller set of customers, but some of them that are well up into that, 10,000 plus pound a day. But obviously the larger that volume goes, the fewer, I'll say, facilities and customers that we're having in that space. So this, and right now, the very kind of present time, that 1,500 pound, 1,800 pound a day system has been a pretty sweet spot.
Well, and it seems like that's where, maybe this is where I'd love to talk a little bit about what you've seen as industry change, with the industry change and the, influx of product and then not growing and this leftover product from last year. What are you seeing as far as, opportunity to really stabilize the market, and what's time frame for that?
I wish I knew the time frame. There definitely seems to be, with the licenses that were doled out, with the excess supply, especially out of 2019, there's definitely this sort of this excessive material. So I think we're on a swing back to get processors to catch up, and so I guess clarify too that, we manufacture the equipment. We do not process. We're not a processor, and that we're taking in biomass and selling off the product. We're selling machines to processors. And so, for us, it's good right now because there are people that are trying to create an efficient processing facility that can keep up with their supply. And we have a lot of the, sort of grower processors are a lot of the folks that we talk to. So they have their own acreage. They're looking to sort of vertically integrate and be able to control that product process from, from growing to finished product in-house and take advantage of that full value chain. And then I think, just within processing, a lot of it has been around achieving a more practical scale and achieving the efficiency. So again, that's why we focused very much on back to the automation point. Beat that horse some more, but it really is about both in operational efficiency and in product quality. It's a really, really key part of the process. And so by doing so, we're reducing the headcount of the staff that's required to run the machines. We're improving the product quality because you just don't have to touch it or take it off throughout the process. And so that move towards automation has been big, and we're not the only ones pursuing it. I've seen other people taking their swings, but I think we're doing a very good job at that automation. That's definitely a direction and a kind of as it's maturing that we're heading.
I 100% agree. I think that not just in the manufacturing side, right, but the lack of error that then is at, the less humans that touch it, the less risk of error or misinformation or whatever that is. Yes. And so, consistency is huge, especially when we're talking about this emerging market and competing with pharmaceuticals. We've got to really level up. Can you speak a little bit about, we've talked about extraction. I want to understand a little more about the THC remediation and what this looks like as far as market for the business. There's been so much R&D and so many hot crops and your regulation around, can we use this hot crop that was grown for hemp and not? So I'm kind of curious from you about, one, THC remediation, and two, the business aspect of that piece for you.
Sure. So THC remediation is a very popular space for us, and it's very exciting. So we have a really cool and novel remediation technology. Our process is very scalable. Traditionally remediation has been done with chromatography. That was sort of that was really the tried and true. That was the way it was done for a very long time. It's an extremely expensive process. It takes a long time. It's really difficult to scale. There's pretty substantial losses in the process as well, just with product loss and sort of collateral loss of the CBD as you're remediating the THC. And then that loss is something that we've seen with a lot of the other products that have been been introduced with, you know, limited success over the last couple of years. The losses really turn out to be fairly high. So we have a remediation technology. We call it our RMD series. But we are able to remediate the THC down to essentially non-detect levels, all without losing any more than 5% of the CBD in the starting material. So it's a very low loss rate. It's a very cost-effective process, and it's very scalable. We have a system running that is capable of doing 1,200 liters a day of actual remediation. So of input product, or it's a 1,200 liter batch. So with this process, it's very scalable. And the scale has been really important to us, because as we look towards the sort of general market and the ability to reach, you know, sort of some of the bigger suppliers that, you know, we always refer to like the Coca-Colas and people who are going to come out and want to offer this stuff in bulk, they're not going to want THC in the product. They just can't tolerate it. And so for them, you know, with this process, we're able to remediate away the THC and leave them with the rest of the product. And it's been effective on, you know, it was developed first for ethanol-based extractions, but we're also actually making really good progress on other solvent-based extractions and remediating those down to the same efficiencies. And so this is really exciting and really important, because it does get this to a large, you know, we always think about like the mass market. There's a lot of these people out there that they're interested in the sort of the benefits of the CBD and those therapeutic benefits, but they really just don't want to mess with the THC.
Right. Well, and it's that risk, right? It's that gray area that is still preventing people from moving in, and yeah, it becomes a big play. And also, so talk to me a little bit about being able to save product. What does it do to the other side of the industry, not just the consumer demand, but for our growers, and give a sense of security for still being able to use product? Does that help the gap?
It does a little bit. So especially if they can get it, as long as they can get it into an extract, right? Because what we're remediating is essentially a crude extract. We don't remediate the plant specifically. So what's unfortunate is I've seen cases where the crop is hot, and because of the hot crop, they're forced to destroy the crop, and it never, so the crop just never sees the light of day. It never becomes a product because the crop's destroyed in the field because it's over these limits. With moves to, you know, like the 1% rule, and some of these other things that are allowing a little more tolerance on the crop side, and getting us into the, letting us get to the extracts, and then using our process to remediate the extract down to compliant or even non-detect levels, right? We really, the process is tuned so you can choose where you wanna stop the process. So we monitor it real time throughout the whole process. So if your goal is compliance, you would remediate down to a compliant level. And if you want truly non-detect, you would continue the process a little longer until you reach that. But so for those farmers that are able to get it out of the field, it absolutely has the potential to save a lot of material that would otherwise have to be discarded.
Okay, so I'm curious about, I guess I'm surprised a little bit about us having these tools to remediate and not being able to get product from field into a vertical or into a processing stream that would, like you said, turn it into an extract, or without having to destroy it at the field. Does that make sense? Like, how do we bridge this gap so that if a field is crop, or if the crop is hot, that we know that it can be processed and remediated through this channel? Yeah.
Yeah. And forgive me for not being completely intimate with the details, but this is where the, you know, so 0.3 and the 1%.
Yeah.
Or two key numbers. For a long time, like 0.3, if the crop was over 0.3 within, I don't know, it was 25 days of the harvest or something like that, it had to be destroyed.
Depends on the ag department, right? It all depends. Each state is so different. Even in our seed trials, the amount of information that's required from one state to the next is very different based on their experience.
Right. And so there's at least some of them, and this is where I can't remember the rules of when and when the 1% is applied. But there's been some allowance to go to, you know, the crops to be up to 1% and still be harvested, but then it has to be managed before it can come to market. And so that's where, like, it's a really good solution of being able to have a crop that is a little over that, you know, there's good band between 0.3 and 1%. So that's a lot of tolerance. And so if you can pull that out of the field and then process it through a system like ours or through a remediation system, and you can bring that product into compliance, it goes a long way towards reducing the amount of crop that has to be destroyed.
If you've got farmers or if we have organizations that are looking for equipment, how do people get in touch with you, Justin?
Yeah, so we're fortunate here. My partners are some good marketers. And so you can always reach us at, you know, ntex.com is our website. And we work with a handful of other industry distributors as well. And so between them, those industries, you know, the trade shows, right now it's really been a lot of just sort of grassroots internal marketing and reach out from our NTEX team, you know, to basically build that presence. And I know we've got some, you know, there's some exciting things that the marketing team is working on for the future to come up and get us more access and, you know, have better outreach there.
Oh, of course. Sure. So, but NTEX is the best place. There's a contact me form or somewhere that they can reach out and get in touch with your team.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So, one thing that I've really been impressed with is the customer service that you guys offer, right? I'm kind of curious, what has been your approach and leadership approach to really provide customer service in this volatile industry, to really set you apart from some of these other organizations or other equipment manufacturers?
Yeah. So thanks for that. It's a proud, definitely a proud area for us. You know, first step is answer the phone, you know, return calls. But no, our team, kind of all kidding aside, it's really important to us that if a customer calls, you know, or a potential customer calls and has a question, that we, you know, we do everything we can to answer it. With our systems, once they're delivered to any questions or issues or anything that may come up with the system in the field, you know, we're always accessible. There's so many channels now between just cell phones, emails, WhatsApp, whatnot, that, you know, we can communicate. It makes it easy. But at the end of the day, we know that, you know, for us, it's really important to communicate and support the customers. And that goes to, like I said, even the potential customers. We do a lot of work upfront with customers who are planning their facilities, who are thinking about what they need to help them determine the capacity that they really do need. How much processing capacity do you need in your facility? What utilities are required? How much square footage? These are all things that, you know, we take very serious, and we, you know, we support them to try to help our customers succeed. In the end, you know, their success is our success, right? And so we work hard to close that loop and close it quickly.
I don't feel like that's any more true in any industry except for ours. Like everybody has to work together, and your success is my success. You know, and you see, we were talking about this yesterday, that we really are as an industry as strong as our weakest link, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've got to be able to make sure and lift that up. And so I'm impressed, because I've seen over and over again in the industry, this get rich quick drive, right? Sell and leave, or sell and abandon, or get involved in a contract. And then once the crop is harvested, now there's no contract. And so I really have to give credit back to paying attention to, you know, to the fact that our customers are our paychecks. That is what, you know, where our focus has to be. And so the value of that, to go back in trust in who you're going to work with, really goes back to who you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. I completely reinforce that. It's I don't know. There's no other way to say it, right? It's our life without our customers, without our partners, you know, this stuff doesn't happen.
And making sure they're successful, the industry fails. Right. And so, I really go back to this being a valued piece when we look at who are we looking to work with? And as a farmer, who do we want, you know, to engage with for future partnerships? And that long-term partnership is that, you know, this isn't going away, and it's unfortunately not a quick get rich quick scheme. May have been in the beginning for some, but it has not been overall.
No, and I think, you know, you're talking about trends and things we've observed. I think that's a part of it. You know, right now you're seeing some people that are in this. These are, you know, we're seeing real farmers now. You know, like the people that are left are people that a lot of them that understand the challenges of what it takes to grow a good crop and how to make it right and make it useful. And, you know, and the same thing on the operational side, a lot of people they're a lot more savvy about, you know, real operational efficiency. What's really important operationally, and they're not getting so duped with kind of cool shiny objects and, you know, whatever, and just buzz. There's a little more credibility, I think, that's been developing.
Exciting part. Well, and the innovation that's coming, right? Yeah. We talk about like up and coming new tech. That's my most exciting part is, and then I think that tech is what really sets people apart. You know, we've got the customer service, and then what are they providing? What makes them different, especially when there are so many extraction opportunities or methods, right?
Yes, it's true. And this is where, you know, for us, we have a full spectrum of processing capability, that modules from, you know, basic extraction through to, you know, distillation and isolation and all of that. You know, we take the same system engineering perspective that I described at the beginning, and we apply it to all of those things so that our modules are really sized and balanced to work with one another. So for example, if you get an isolation module, you know, we have a couple of different sizes that are matched to our extraction module, so that, you know, and the same thing with our remediation systems. These are all intended, and they're deliberately designed to be balanced so that you have maximum operational efficiency with the product in the front end of the system and the product that comes out of the back end. And so it's with regards to tech, you know, that's a lot of it is even process innovation, just in you know, automation, and I don't know, call it like industrial innovation, but it's, you know, there's that bit of it. And then the other part is the whole process stuff, like just new ways to get to the same end goal with less work, you know, or less energy. So those are other things that we're always trying to explore and trying to find new ways to kind of get to the end with more efficiency.
Okay. You said something and I want to come back to it. Less energy, because this is something that comes up a lot on the, especially on industrial applications or the industrial farming of hemp, right? And the carbon piece that's tied to it, which is then the energy aspect of carbon sequestration. And where does extraction and this piece of the cannabis industry really play a role in, like, what does the ESG scores look like? And what should people be paying attention to when building extraction equipment and then claiming like cannabis is this green footprint, and really, you know, are some processes not as green as others? And so can you kind of talk about where do you fall in line there?
Yeah. So, you know, things that you can pay attention to are like the solvents. Some solvents are more harsh. You know, most of these, the extractions use some sort of solvent. There's some solventless innovation, but none of it's really reached the scale yet. So it's predominantly everybody is, you're using some solvent, whether it's CO2 or ethanol or something else. And so, you know, finding the a solvent that's sort of, you know, I guess environmentally friendly or certainly less bad. Also thinking about how you recover that solvent. So those things, you know, our systems, for example, it's ethanol based, but it's being closed loop. We recover all of our solvent. So the solvent that goes in, there's a small amount obviously lost with the biomass, the waste, but it's a very small percentage of the solvent that's lost. So the vast majority, you know, high 90s% of our solvent is actually recaptured. So it's during the evaporation process, it's recondensed and it's fed back to the front end of the system to be reused for more extraction. So that's absolutely, you know, having a way to close the loop on your solvent recovery. And solvent reuse reduces the impact. And then just from, you know, a straight up energy, you know, we're exploring some other ways. You know, right now we use a extract, you evaporate, and then you go to distillation. And so we're exploring always other ways to even, whether it's reduce the duration in any one of those steps, or if we can eliminate steps, right? Every time you do that, if a step you don't have to do, that's just that much less waste or energy consumed. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of good work going on in that domain. I certainly know there is in our shop, and it is an important part because it really feeds the whole OPEX loop, right? And it's where we work hard to make that operationally efficient, and the happy byproduct is more environmentally beneficial.
Well, and realistically, operation and economics are what sell the deal, right? It's got to make sense economically to our farmer to make money, right? If they're going to buy and invest. And I think this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but why we're seeing so much of a movement, or why you're really seeing movement of farmers wanting to secure their supply chain, is, you know, being able to capitalize on the revenue that comes from the processed material also.
Right. Yes. And I think that's where the vertical integration is coming in. I guess if you're getting it right. Yeah. Because it's, you know, and we see that pricing kind of shift around. Like, you saw biomass prices just tank when there was such a glut of supply, right. You know, and even crude has come down over these years. And so there's also a ton of exploration in the different compounds and the different forms, right? So we're, you know, we're constantly trying to stay apprised of what, you know, what else is going on? How can we tailor our systems to be able to offer some of these other products and let customers reach those higher value endpoints. And that certainly is, you know, like remediation is a great example of being able to get the T-free product. Once you remediate it and you get down to T-free, there's a pretty significant boost in the end product value for the customers.
There you go. Right. That's something I talk about all the time when we look at building supply chain on industrial processing, is how do we get more of that end material profitability back to the supply chain, or the start of the supply chain. And so really look at vertical integration being more and more desirable on smaller scale, right? Sheree actually just made a great comment. I have to give a shout out. She said, Entex is amazing and offers in-house engineering, machining, and fabrication, which definitely aids in customer experience while being able to offer installation, site planning, etc. That was a perfect commercial. Anything else you want to add to that? That was great. Site planning? Want to talk about site planning at all? I'm curious, you know, what does that look like if somebody's interested? You know, what does that entail?
Yeah, so it's kind of the beginning, often the beginning of the process. So it starts with a phone call, right? The customers can explain to us what they're looking to do, how much scale, right? How much do they want to process? What end products do they want to achieve? And then it's from there that we'll talk to them then about what modules they might need, kind of what pieces would make sense for their processing, how large they are. We also help with, you know, there's a lot of this stuff, being ethanol, we're still subject to like C1, D2 requirements. And so we can help the customers with that, and we'll work closely with their, whether it's an industrial hygienist or whoever the authority is, you know, in their region. We have customers around the world, so sometimes that varies depending on where, you know, where we're working. But we'll work closely with those jurisdictional folks to ensure that, you know, that the system is doing what it can to comply. And to that end is also, you know, we're seeing a large push for, you know, GMP compliance, whether that's just, you know, the CGMP here or EU GMP. A lot of folks, that's an important part, even if they don't intend to certify their lab to GMP, they really want the capability. They kind of want the benefits that come with that sort of certification. So really in the site planning, the whole thing, it's understanding all of that. It's really this sort of broad customer problem statement and customer requirements. And so we have, you know, John Davis is our technical lead, and he's really fantastic with the whole breadth of all of that, kind of understanding how all those pieces fit together. But yeah, so we'll plan that all the way from the kind of from the very beginning and do a big sort of the big overview, lay out those pieces. And then fortunately, with all of the in-house capabilities, we're then able to go from there and really tailor the systems to those needs. So, you know, our systems, we like to, you know, we present them as a sort of standard. And I'll take like a Mini 18, for example. It's an 1800 pound system. From customer to customer, it's going to be largely the same, but every customer is different. So maybe you want to be able to take off material in a different spot. You might have some other cool feature that you just want to integrate here or there. You know, we've had some cool requests on offtake, kind of offtake mechanisms. And with all of these things, because it's all done in-house, we're not stuck with whatever our suppliers are providing, because we actually, you know, we machine and we fabricate these things all here in-house. So we can easily integrate those, all those enhancements. We can make those changes. We can learn from our customers and we can make improvements sort of real time, you know, on their system during the build or from system to system.
Okay. I've got all kinds of notes I've been taking over here, making sure I all these questions, because so I want to talk to or kind of go back to your beginning in aerospace, right? It really piques my interest when I think about the long-term opportunity for hemp in aerospace. Where do you see similarities in past careers like in aerospace to a cannabis industry? Where are your similarities?
Yeah, so from the aerospace days to now, a lot of the biggest things are with regards to, you know, these are complicated projects. So the reality is, like, when we're talking about whole facility systems and end-to-end extraction, it's a pretty complex system. You know, I mean, it's a relatively simple process when you break it down like a little process diagram. But the reality is, like, the whole system, the heat that's required at one end, the chilling that's required at the other, the filtration, like all these things, the system engineering perspective, it's a complicated system. And so the aerospace days really, it's kind of that project bit, right? That's most, I know we talked about at the beginning before the call, even we're talking about some of the fiber stuff that you've been doing. I'd be really curious to see if there's to specifically tie it back to aerospace, if there was some cool material opportunities in aerospace, but I think that's a little different from our perspective. You know, from mine, this really kind of the project perspective and bringing that professionalism and the sort of industrial scale and the sort of the sound science and engineering, like I like to call it, into the space has been really useful for managing customer requirements, making sure that we're checking the boxes, you know, everything's going out the door the way it's supposed to go and really achieving that product quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give a real quick shout out to some few people that are listening. Susie, I saw you on. If you're still listening, shout out. Thank you very much for saying hello. Mark says hello. Good day. Ray, again, thanks for joining. Derek, Justin, Kevin, Christopher, thank you guys all for chiming in. Anybody else that's there, let us know that you're chiming in. I see there's quite a few of you on LinkedIn and YouTube and Facebook. So let us know if you have any questions specific for Justin. And then another real quick shout out to a few of our sponsors. Again, to South Bend Industrial Hemp, Let's Talk Hemp, Formation Ag, AgriLead, Prairie Band Ag, Almco, IND Hemp. Thank you very much for your sponsors. And if anybody else is interested in becoming a sponsor or getting involved with GHA, please let me know. I'd love a shout out or love... I'd love a shout out. I'd love to give you a shout out, but I'd love to have you involved and get you our benefits. On our seed trial benefits, real quick, our sponsors are getting access to data in November, where other data for seed trials on our national fiber variety trials will not be available until April or May. So heads up, just to get your foot in the door and get access to the nation data for fiber variety trials. So back to aerospace. Yes, I would love to talk to you more about the benefits or applications and things that we're seeing, even on the biofuel, you know, biobutanol, and then, of course, the auto body parts or the airplane body parts, you know, will be interesting as fiber progresses and products innovation progresses.
Are they doing that yet?
There's lots of people looking into it. Yes. Yeah. I think the challenge still comes back to the fiber, right? The length of fiber that's needed to put into a replacement for the body parts.
Gotcha. Okay.
Car parts, you know, car parts are being replaced. And so,
yeah.
And then yes, definitely biobutanol. There's a lot of study in, you know, jet fuel and butanol and whatever else. I know biofuel is not necessarily, or biodiesel. I don't really know what the different fuels. I thought all fuel is the same, just like I thought all fuel was the same. I learned a lot. Yeah. Yes, yes. Okay, so what's next for you guys? Where do you see, you know, opportunity, and how do people really support? What's something that we as an association or any listeners can really support you guys with?
Yeah, so for us, you know, I guess what's next is it's always adding more. So we're, you know, for example, on the remediation, this is we've just brought this to market. We're just introducing a new complement to that part. It's a device we call the CanaSpec. And the CanaSpec is a real-time NAR sensor. So this device actually, it looks at the oil essentially during the remediation process. And we're able to monitor the CBD and THC levels real-time during the processing. So for a lot of us, you know, the things are time-based. And so if you run too long, you're just causing additional product loss that's really unnecessary. And again, we talk about the difference between sort of compliant material and non-detect material when we're speaking about THC. This device also lets you basically remediate to a target level. So anywhere between, you know, whatever level you want, even if it was above compliance for some reason, but basically you can remediate down. And so this device is really cool technology. Again, it lends itself towards the automation. It helps with product quality. So again, it's in there. It reduces the time. You know, there's no HPLC monitoring, a lot of the other processing that takes pretty high skill and pretty expensive equipment. So this device reads that, those levels real time. The current form, it's targeted at supporting our remediation process. So I think that we'll have, sometime in the not so distant future, we'll apply that same technology to other parts of the process. So, you know, you can imagine using it in the extraction process to monitor product quality at the extraction or concentration levels. And same thing with, you know, evaporation and whatnot. So for us, you know, we're kind of constantly looking at both, you know, really moving technology part forward with things like the CanaSpec or other changes in the overall process. And then also, like I mentioned, industrial innovation. So we're also always looking at ways to just reduce that, you know, about the two major pieces, reducing the operator input and potential for error and improving the product quality within the automated part of our system. So kind of constantly pushing those envelopes and always looking at new mechanisms to achieve those objectives.
You'd mentioned you've got clients internationally. Can you talk about some markets that are really developing or growing, especially on the extraction side? And I'm curious too, you know, as we start to see like the Southern, you know, Latin America and Chile, Ecuador, Costa Rica, Colombia are all legalizing, what you're, right. You know, are you guys really moving down in that area as well?
We are. So a lot of the world is opening up, and that's part of what makes the industry so exciting, I think, for all of us, right? Is how much the world is opening up and how fast it's opening. So we certainly have a good presence in, you know, Central America. We're talking to a number of customers down there. And then another spot that has been really popular is Thailand. So Thailand has been a really good market for us as of late. So we're doing a lot of business in Thailand and Asia. And then of course the EU, you know, we have a number of things going over in the EU as well. But I mean, you're absolutely right. Just as the world opens up and, you know, everybody sees, kind of sees this benefit and gets this opportunity, they need the equipment. And even for them, you know, we've been fortunate that a lot of the people that we're seeing there, we're also talking to a lot of really good international business people. So their operation and operational efficiency is really important to them. So, you know, one of our European customers sent over a GMP consultant, you know, he's like an ex-Pfizer guy that came in and did a walkthrough with us to actually qualify our system for GMP compliance in this customer's new facility. And so it was fortunate. I mean, it was a fantastic opportunity for us. We got a lot of great constructive input. And even more exciting is, you know, at the end, he kind of signed off our system as, you know, ready to go into that EU GMP facility. So it's very cool. And we're seeing a lot of that around the world. And that's kind of the theme, is these, you know, more professional operators and more markets opening all the time.
More validated. That's validating, right? We kind of talked about this yesterday on a talk, is, or I mean, on our conversation with Cameron. In France, they certify the herd as a building material, right? It's that certification that kind of gives it that validation. Just like for you, having somebody else in GMP say, yep, you're ready to go, it just validates the operation and the success for moving forward. And I think that we're seeing so much of that in people looking to the US for this type of equipment as their markets are opening up. Would you agree? Would you have any feedback? What's your opinion?
I do. You know, I mean, I think some people have taken that approach where they, you know, they buy some Chinese equipment because it, you know, it looks cheap and it's polished. And so they, you know, it looks pretty in the picture, but then they put it together and they realize just how hard it is to make it work and how little support they get in making it work. And so you end up piecing these things together with systems that aren't really balanced, and it takes your own engineer to kind of get it all ironed out. And so we've seen a lot of those people that have maybe had some of that experience, and they're now looking, you know, to markets like the US to buy higher quality equipment. And so absolutely have seen that influence and that interest from international markets looking here to buy systems.
So say that I want to come in and get an 1800 or a MIDI, right? Talk to me about time frame or timeline. When can I expect to have equipment available?
So the timelines vary, really kind of vary by system. Generally, we talk about, you know, 16 to 24 weeks, depending on the system. And it can sometimes be faster. A lot of it depends on, there's a couple of key pieces that we get that are support equipment. And so we've, in the current state of the supply chain anyway, while we make most things, all the extraction stuff, tanks, frames, all that stuff we do in-house, but we do still have to buy some electronics. We have some chillers and some other things that we buy. And on some of those products, we have been hit, like so much of the world, with supply chain problems.
Right.
But we're able to mitigate a lot of that with the in-house capabilities. So some of those things get us. We often have a workaround with maybe something from inventory. You know, generally we're talking about that, you know, 16, like I said, 16, 20, 24 weeks, depending on the size of the system.
That's great, because I was anticipating 18 months. Like I supply chain and what you hear on all this other. So that's much better and much more feasible, especially for getting into something this year.
Yeah, we can, you know, it's a lot of work, definitely. And they go on, and, you know, when you work with the customers, there's usually that much work for them to get a facility ready anyway. But, you know, we certainly, you know, we get those calls of somebody who's like, my building's up, it's all there, I need a system tomorrow. And it's not usually tomorrow, but some of them, you know, lead time definitely plays a factor. And being able to move faster with the manufacturing and the production part is definitely a big advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, you know, going back to U.S. manufactured, I think that there's a big component to the engineering that goes behind it in the support you get. I think that was like a key thing you mentioned, is it's one thing to get equipment because it looks good. It's another thing to be like, how do I put this thing together again? What do I do? So
yeah, we've lived through it. I mean, we've you know, we've owned in various capacities some of this other foreign equipment, and can speak from firsthand experience how absolutely painful it can be to get any support from them. And so, you know, so that goes across the board, and this goes way back, you know, to the beginning of our conversation on customer service and support. Mm-hmm. It's so important to us. So while we, you know, we do put, we have excellent engineering that goes into the products, at Entex, we're also really, really, it's very important to us that our customers, like I said, that they get answers. You know, that's it. At the end of the day is we get back to them and we support them kind of all the way through the process, even after delivery.
Well, I love this background you have. I'm watching the guys work in the background. It's sometimes I would love to come and do a tour and see what you guys have going on. In fact, for
anybody, I would love to have you.
Yeah, I would love to come out and tour. So maybe I'll reach out and we'll put something on the schedule and do something.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Okay, well, while we wrap this up, I always want to know, what is the best, just because you've been in the industry as long as you have and really seen from in the industry and then outside coming in, what is some of the best innovation that you've seen?
So innovations for me, you know, like I said, the not to be self-serving, but the closed loop part of the process, like truly achieving the closed loop. And there's a lot of painstaking detail that, you know, that we had to work through in our own R&D to actually get to the point where the product goes in the front end and literally, you know, you put it back in and you hit go, basically push the button and it does the work. So, and then it's pumped from, you know, from through extraction, through filtration, through evaporation, you know, all the way to the point that it's coming out, basically continuous production distillate, closing this whole loop and having that, you know, eliminating rotovaps, eliminating a lot of the handling, that innovation has been really enabling for these products.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, this is like, it's kind of funny when people say, well, what's your favorite part? And no, I once said, well, hemp plastic or hemp biofuels. And now it's very much about data and processes because I think that's going to be like, it's that tipping point on what's going to continue to make us successful as we scale. And it's so much about the scalability. I had a farmer one day say, perfect. You know, it's one thing to grow a couple of plants in your backyard. It's another thing to be a farmer. It's completely different businesses and different models and needs. And so thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I've actually really enjoyed getting to know where you guys are as a business again and how much progress you guys have made. Do you have any shout outs or anything that you want to, you know, anybody want to give a shout out to, businesses or companies or people that are just doing things right in the industry?
Geez, I wish you would have prepared me for that one.
Surprise!
I don't have any huge specific shout outs. You know, it's kind of the industry at large, you know, it's good. I think, you know, I appreciate the people that are still here, that are doing this professionally, that are taking a methodical approach, you know, and really trying to do this right. And I get to meet more and more of those people every day. So kind of at large, you know, I appreciate the industry and probably most of the people that are paying attention to a call like today, because, you know, they're trying to learn, do this right. And, you know, like you said, it's not the get rich quick guys. It's, these are real pros taking their part of the business real serious. And, it's nice to be able to work with those kind of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's that real business, right?
Right.
It's been pretty exciting. I just shared a link, in the chat with everybody, but we've got some cool t-shirts there. I was going to show it to you. Let me see if I can find it. Moving Hemp Forward t-shirts. I'll have to get you one, but they're on hemp. They're really cool. Same simple Moving Hemp Forward together shirts. I shared the link. Please get on and either donate or sponsor, join GHA. You can do it with the Friends of Hemp link or at globalhempassociation.org. And then just a real quick reminder, we have an event after this one this afternoon at 2:00. It's a Q&A, everything from banking to farming or farming to banking. I'm really excited about this one because there's obviously a lot of topics that we get to cover and go over. So please join. You can find that also on globalhempassociation.org under the events tab or on Hemp Hallway if you're a member. All of our events and connections are also listed there. And then next week, we've got some awesome interviews. We go live again Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10 a.m. And this weekend, a group of us will be in Utah at the Utah Can event. So I want to give a shout out to everybody in Utah to please come and join. You can, I'll actually share or tag the link for that on our social media page. So follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all the goods. Other than that, Justin, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, thank you so much for the time and just a reminder, yeah, any extraction, NTEX, we're here and we'd be happy to talk.
Yes, on the website. In fact, I'll scroll back up and get you the website. It's just ntex.com, right?
That's right.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you very, very much. If anybody needs anything, don't hesitate to reach out to either Justin or myself. And Justin, you also. If there's anything we can do as a group or association, please don't hesitate to holler at us.
Thank you.
Okay, absolutely. We'll talk later.
All right, thanks.